A season of VAR fuck-ups, capped off by a VAR fuck-up, brings you...
The Next City!
Welcome to Phoenix City for this week. We're all here. We've all got name badges on this week.
No, we don't. Frosty doesn't.
It's just not true. I'm not wearing mine.
No, you're not. It's on the table. But Frosty is wearing his. No, you're not.
No, he's not wearing
Why
his.
Why would I need a name badge for my own office?
That's a good point. We're at Frosty's office in what's called the library. And there's a sign on the wall that says, "Shush, the library is for quiet working only." Which means I think we should all talk very quietly today.
Well, it's okay, mate. We're not working.
Is anybody working?
Shh, no. People are trying to read.
No, they're not.
Who's reading?
Ask your wife.
Brendan Lovegrove.
I didn't print out run sheets, so nobody's reading at the moment, which is fine.
You didn't print them out, so no one's going to be reading at all.
Yeah. I'm reading Dave's name tag, though, because it's on the table. We should put that on, Dave. Otherwise, you might not be allowed in again.
No.
All right. We're all here to talk about football.
Some interesting things to talk about.
Where do we want to start? Where do we want to start?
Grand final?
Do you want to start with the grand final or do you want to start with the Ferns?
Grand final.
Grand final?
Grand final.
All right, grand final. That was fun, wasn't it?
How about that VAR?
Good times.
What a complete, utter cock-up.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's the only way to put it.
There is no way to describe it. Starting from the ineptitude of the officials to miss the offside in the first place.
That's a hard one. That's a hard one.
Nope.
Disagree. I don't even think it's hard. I think with the fallback of VAR, even if you think, it's probably offside, the thing is these days you're better to err on the side of caution and keep your flag down and let them look at it. That's the fallback. It's the safety net.
It's like runouts in cricket. They always just go straight up. They don't look at it anymore.
If it's close, they go, we'll look up. Look upstairs at this and decide. Because I think if you don't have VAR in this game, I think the lino probably puts his flag up. I think he's convinced enough that he would have had there not been the safety.
But he knows that VAR will pick it up, and so he doesn't.
Yep. But it's grand final. You don't want to fuck it up on the grand stage.
Yeah.
He needs to flag anyway.
That's not the coaching, though. The coaching that was being given to officials this year was, if you are even the slightest amount of doubt in here, play on, because we can call back a goal that shouldn't have been, but we can't.
We can't
let them play on after you've called a wrong the offside. So,
which is wrong.
It's wrong.
But, sure,
but
it's wrong.
That's
so wrong.
As it is.
But that's how it works.
So,
Dave's absolutely right.
Personal opinion then, he should have flagged, end of story, if he thought it was offside. So beyond that, the fact that the Melbourne-based company Hawkeye's system cracked out 30 seconds before it was actually required, at the one point it was required in the entire match.
Right.
In the biggest match of the season, I find it a little too coincidental.
I don't find it coincidental.
Me neither.
I fully believe that Hawkeye crapped out for a minute, and as soon as it went down, they started working on getting it back, and by the time it was back, the goal was scored. I don't think that is bullshit. I think that FFA legit told the truth about what happened. I don't think there's any conspiracy there at all.
I totally agree. What I find amusing about this is part of the contract and setup they had with getting the VAR in is that the Fox, the broadcasters, should have the same angles as VAR and shouldn't be showing anything that kind of impugns VAR, which is the fucking first thing they went out there and did, threw the FFA under the bus. It was quite brilliant. And then the FFA's come out and gone, oh no, it was a failure in the system. It's like, well, you let them put in a system where they had two different feeds, despite that's what the agreement was.
Yeah.
And they've thrown you under the bus and you haven't said jack to them. I mean, I get that you can't kind of go, oh, the what about Fox, but surely that would make you dirty ass.
That's the thing here, is that there should have been a backup system in place.
Yeah, absolutely. How there isn't the fallback.
Yeah.
If they are running some sort of closed loop, separate VAR system,
which they are.
Which it sounds
obviously
like
they are.
If there's a problem with that, you need a fallback.
And in which case, all
the broadcast feed
is as simple as Fox a Sports. Television.
Yeah.
Any television. Yeah. There were hundreds of televisions in the stadium that I'm sure were playing this. Every corporate box will have had a TV
probably have just turned around
exactly
and seen
the replay you needed to make this call. But for some reason, the VAR box, no access to that. And or it may be that they could see it, but they weren't allowed to rule based on that, which is insane.
Exactly. At the very least, what needed to happen here was that on the Fox replay, which happened before play restarted.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everyone had seen it. We had seen it at the pub that it was offside before play restarted. All it needed was the VAR to look at that and go, hang on, we should properly check this.
Yeah.
The game has stopped. The ball's gone in the net. We can actually spend 2 minutes getting VAR back online because there is reasonable doubt about this goal. It was clearly onside and there was no problem with it whatsoever. Then just play on. But that's not what the replay showed. I think that's where the problem here is, that they should have waited until VAR was back and made the right call.
Yeah, and one thing for me in the statement the FFA put out as well, certainly from my reading of it, didn't say that the system was down entirely. What it said was they didn't have the angle required. So they had other angles. Based on how I interpret that. And to be honest, the wide shot of this rather than the straight down the line still shows enough that you have at least one player offside, if not several. Like it's still pretty clear cut from that angle that this is gonna be marginal at best. It's not everyone's clearly onside. If you'd had the wrong angle and gone, oh, it's close, maybe. But this shows enough evidence you go, no, we need to wait for the real angle on this. And they should have done that.
At the worst case scenario, you commandeer the television broadcast and you say to the broadcaster,
show me this replay.
Show me this angle. And that's what happens. That's how it works in cricket, for example, is that the stuff that we're seeing on our TV screens is actually what the producer is choosing to show because he's showing it to the official.
Yeah, and you can hear them asking, can you give me this angle? Yeah, can you give me, you know, square leg, blah, blah,
and
blah.
I don't understand why in 140 games this season that wasn't a thing. We went 140 games and it only became a problem the 140th, which is half the problem. But we went 140 games without anybody going, hang on, what if my screen breaks?
I'm going to go conspiracy theory here and suggest there must have been another game this season where it's cut out at least for a period. Sure. If they're operating this closed loop across that many games, it's happened before, and they've just gone, it wasn't important. But that should have been we probably need a backup here. And it should have been identified much earlier than before we got here. Because I do not believe that if the system is prone to outages of a minute, which seems to be the case, that hasn't happened at any point during the rest of the season. But I think it has. And I think they've just gone, well, it hasn't mattered yet. We'll just keep ironing out the problems and hope it's fine.
Yeah, I just think that if it has happened previously, it's just there was no incident at that period where it was needed. And that is, you're right, that should have been the warning sign that they needed a backup.
Yeah.
And when it was so blatantly obvious from the replays that there was three guys standing in offside positions, then they really should have done something about it.
Only one of those players matters, though.
The only one that mattered was the one that got the ball offside.
The only one who actually commits an offside offence is James Donaghy when he heads the ball back across goal. At the point that he heads the ball back across goal, all of the other players are behind them and therefore they're onside. It doesn't matter that they were ever offside. There was a very clear offside here. And it's not like it was in the middle of open play or anything that you could understand if they missed it.
No.
It was a free kick. And it was on the free kick that it happened. It wasn't like it was in the middle of a 27 pass thing where someone was slightly offside. It was the key ball in for this thing. And it's just it's ridiculous that we've been subjected all season to the inconsistencies of the VAR to have it crap out on us on a very clear call decision. And it just makes a mockery of the whole season.
I have to admit, I don't actually believe the conspiracy theory is just playing.
I think it just crapped out at the wrong moment, and there weren't backups in place, and that meant that we got a season defining decision that was just completely incorrect and should have been ruled out.
Yeah, and I think that's the key thing is this wasn't a marginal call. You know, we've seen ones in other leagues and probably in the A-League, but I can't think of a good example in the A-League of, you know, ones where a head or a knee is offside if you freeze at the right moment. This wasn't that. This is a player very clearly offside. This is not a judgment call. This is not fine margins. This is the clear and obvious mistake that VAR is there to catch. This isn't, you know, in rugby they had to kind of redefine some of the rules around the use of video and grounding the ball, because what were perfectly legal groundings of the ball, if you freeze them down and go frame by frame, you can find moments where there isn't full contact with the ball and stuff like that. This isn't that. This is a player clearly offside and you have the video evidence to show it. It's the perfect example of what should be caught by VAR. A bad decision that should have been overturned, and we just didn't have the ability to overturn it for whatever the reasons that are put up are.
Genuine question. Is Hawkeye doing the VAR at the World Cup?
I believe, I don't know for certain, I think there's three companies worldwide that have FIFA approval to roll out this technology.
Well, it's an interesting one, because to my understanding of this, before Hawkeye with Ryan under the bus here, that Hawkeye were involved in goal line technology.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
And that's where their specialty is, and I'm totally fine with that. I mean, they certainly have some
specialty in that area. Brilliant.
But you don't require goal line technology and that sort of ball tracking and all that stuff to make this offside decision. This is just a simple camera and press pause on the right moment. I don't understand why this feed requires Hawkeye's involvement. I can definitely understand the goal line stuff and, you know, the beep in the ref's ear and all that stuff is certain approved suppliers, and that makes total sense.
Cool.
And Hawkeye should be on that panel. But why the feed for an offside call, or, you know, if this is a red card for someone punching someone, is this still going through Hawkeye and their closed loop system as well? Because I don't understand why you'd need to do that.
The thing is that it's a specific software package that has access to all the camera feeds and the ability to rock and roll it back and all that kind of thing in real time.
Also known as, you know, a TV broadcast.
No. The difference is that there's actually specific controls in the VAR system that we've seen photos of and things where there's a VAR operator and the VAR referee.
Correct, but this is just allowing the system that you're discussing with cricket of the person saying out loud, can you show me square leg hotspot?
Sure.
And a producer does it.
But
you're just going, now sit them in the same room and don't have them do it over the television broadcast.
The difference is that the things on the television broadcast, and this is getting really mundane, so don't cut me off this time. The difference between a television broadcast is it's made made for a television broadcast. It's made for real time, push this out and done. Whereas the VR system is just ever so slightly different in the sense that it's about going back over the last 2 minutes or so, and while we're doing that, not caring about what's happened third, being able to jump forward. It's just different enough that you need a different software package for it, and someone has to develop that. I don't know why Hawkeye have it, but it makes perfect sense to me that Hawkeye, having already got the FIFA approval to do goal technology and the relationship with IFAB and all those things, that Hawkeye would at least submit to be the ones to build the software, and then they did it.
Just to play devil's advocate, though, all that stuff is occurring behind the scenes anyway with a normal television broadcast. You're just not seeing it. There's no reason that this can't be not on a live
broadcast.
Because when you cut back to a replay, for example, and when they do a halftime package and all those things, exactly the sort of rock and rolling and cutting and editing is occurring behind the scenes.
That's like eight people doing that, not one.
Correct, but
VAR's never going to be able to roll out if it takes eight people to operate VAR.
No, but you don't need eight people. That's because they're doing all the different things. The thing is, you can do this over the TV broadcast. We've seen it in cricket. I have no problem with that being the way the system works.
I think
that
TV broadcast as the fullback should be the way it works here, because you're not actually because cricket's so stop-start, it makes a difference. But theoretically, this is always happening. They're always doing this for the whole game. It makes sense to me that there's a software package. I'm not quite sure what your point
is. I'm saying the software package isn't Hawkeye. It's just whatever anyone is using for broadcast anyway.
Apparently it is Hawkeye. And like that's what FFA said, is Hawkeye. Yeah. There's no doubt there. FFA said we use Hawkeye software.
My argument is you don't need that. The package exists within the broadcast.
I think you do.
You probably need two more staff.
I think you need some sort of package from somewhere, and it doesn't really matter where it's from. Anyway, the decision was wrong, and it ended 1-0, and I'm very happy that it ended 1-0, because if it had ended 2-0, then victory would have won anyway, would be what everyone's saying. Not necessarily the case at all, because we saw that victory very much changed their tactics once they went 1-0 up.
And Newcastle had to as well.
And I don't blame the victory for changing their tactics to become much more defensive. If the Phoenix went 1-0 up in a grand final that we were by far the underdog in, I would absolutely hope that we would go defensive on it.
I totally wouldn't, because we're crap at it.
Okay, but if that was the way that we could win a grand final, I'd be fine with that. And I was fine with the victory doing it. It just meant that Newcastle had to work very hard to try and score, and they couldn't do it. If it was nil all, that would be different, because the victory would actually have to try and score a goal.
And O'Donovan wouldn't have actually had to try and kick Sorensen's head off.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's obviously different. The next talking point.
Actually, sure.
What do we all think about that?
It's illegal in full contact karate to kick someone in the head, let alone wearing studs.
I think it's absolutely a red card.
Yep,
so don't let what I'm about to say.
No, because I'm in the Patrick game here, I believe.
No, not even close to being not a red card.
No, it's a red card.
I agree. Absolutely a red card. The thing I'd take umbrage with is the people that are saying that this is the worst thing they've ever seen on a football pitch.
Oh, no, I've seen much, much worse than that.
I've seen Rory O'Donovan.
It's a horrible incident, but it's a footballing incident.
But this was like 10-game ban worthy. And there are a significant number of people who are saying that.
There were people saying that he should never play football again.
I don't disagree with the 10-game ban, but it's because of his form for all his violent offences, not because of this one incident.
My issue with this is I don't... He hasn't gone in there to try and injure anyone. from everything I know about Roy O'Donovan, and I'm willing to suggest that he certainly has form for violent conduct, I don't think this was a violent act. I think this is a man who can get his boot that high and still get a toe on the ball totally. And get it in the goal.
That's what I see
and
here
given
as well.
Grand final situation and the way the score is, that is 100% his intent. His intent yep. there is, oh, I might be able to get that. And he throws his foot up there and he hopes he gets a toe on it. And yep. it's reckless for sure. And it all goes the worst possible way it could go. But I don't think at any point there he's gone, I'm going to go in on the keeper here. I think he's gone, I can win that ball.
I was going to say exactly the same thing as him. It all comes down to intent. And for me, there was no intent yeah. on his behalf to injure the keeper. Mm. It's purely, I believe I can get to the ball, and I'm a bit of a douche canoe, so I've fucked it up. Yeah. But there was no intent ever yeah. to injure Lawrence Torrens.
The only thing you could say is that the odds are not in his favour in this case. There's probably a 10% correct. Chance he'll get there.
Oh, and not so even.
But even if it's 10% chance of getting there, usually you just pull out. You'd go, I'm not going to get. I'm probably not going to get there. I'm going to pull out here. It was the 93rd minute of the grand final. Yeah. Like,
where this puts you through to extra time.
This is the only thing you can possibly do. And I reckon you take that 10% chance.
With the outcome of that challenge, mate, I just want to congratulate you on a very good reference.
Yeah, for me, regardless of whether it's the 93rd minute, he's got to know the keeper's coming for that. There's no way he's thinking that's gone in behind. I'm the only one through. The keeper's not going to come for it, and he's still stuck his boot in there. For me, it's beyond reckless because you'll put that boot up that high. You know the keeper is going to be coming towards you, and if you're anywhere near the ball, so is the keeper. So I don't think there's
put in the reverse situation, and let's say that O'Donovan's favoured to win this ball with a head because then we take the high boot and all of that out of it. Do you think that Thomas throws himself at that, even if he's only a 10% chance to get the ball, but knows he's in a 100% chance to elbow O'Donovan in the face?
I think 100% he throws himself
exactly.
at that ball.
And I think it just is the luck of the draw that Thomas is favoured here, that it's slightly closer to him and he's more likely to catch this. I think if the situation is reversed, I think he absolutely goes through Roy and probably gets a red card himself. But that's not the way it was. And I don't think in that situation you'd be going, oh, Thomas, what a horrible person punching a striker in the face like that. I think you'd be going, he was trying to get the ball. It didn't go well. Fine. And, you know, I would love to be part of the keepers union here, but I look at that challenge from Roy, and I do not see any part of that where he looks like he's trying to get the keeper. I think he knows he's not favoured, but he also knows it's grand final, he's got to go for it.
Oh, yeah. I get his incentive. It's just that he's completely disregarded the risk. Hmm. That's the issue for me. It's not that he's made a calculated decision here. He's just gone, fuck it. I'm just going to do it. And if you did that high boot anywhere else on the field, you're getting a red. Doesn't matter.
Oh, absolutely.
End of story, it is a red card challenge.
It's a red card.
And no one's going to argue. He didn't argue it. He walked. As soon as it showed, he walked. He knew he was getting redded. So there's no question it's anything other than a red.
I definitely dispute people who say, though, that, you know, you should never play football in Australia again. And all
no, no, that's no. all shit.
I don't think there's any malice in this at all. I think it's a situational thing, and I think many players in that same situation would have done the same thing.
To be honest,
we just none of us around this table can get our boot as high as Roy does there. But if you watch,
I'd be stoked if I could.
He's actually not that far away. I mean, yeah. we're talking a matter of frames difference. When you do that full speed, he's bloody close.
If he got a touch on this ball and just touched it around Lawrence Thomas, everything else was exactly the same. But if the timings are maybe like 0.1 of a second different,
yep.
he touches the ball into the back of the net. He's a bloody hero for throwing himself.
To be honest, keepers are protected. It's probably ruled out.
No, I say it is ruled out anyway because it's dangerous conduct. Doesn't matter if it's
reckless. It's reckless, regardless.
To be fair to O'Donovan, he comes out after the game and apologises to Lawrence Thomas on the field. And for by all accounts, Lawrence Thomas accepts the apology. And I read somewhere that
the rumour is he's even written to the MRP say, you know, he's just going for the ball there.
Yeah, that was a 50-50 challenge. I happened to get it. Yeah. And
yes, it's reckless, but just give a reckless ban. Don't give anything additional.
Because if it was reckless, it would be a yellow card, nothing more.
Yeah.
It's excessive force. That's why.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
And
but I think a 3-game ban here would be fair. Of the
100%.
Minimum one plus additional two for boot to the face.
Yep.
But I think three matches would be sufficient.
The outcome's got to count for something, right? But I don't think the outcome counts for 9 or 10 weeks.
No,
I think it counts for this is more than the minimum.
The headbutt was 8 weeks. So there's no way in the world there should be 10.
No. Unless you're saying...
he kicked him in the head on purpose.
Well, not necessarily. You're saying
okay, look for past bad.
Yeah, okay. I think that then it might history. Get up there. But I mean, you also have to compare it to say a certain Melbourne assistant coach who runs on and slaps someone on the face and only gets 4.
Yep.
Perspective Phoenix coach.
Yeah. Not anymore, buddy. Not anymore. But so it's like you're kind of, if you're comparing it to that, it's definitely below a four because, you know, he was at least playing football.
That was unbelievable.
I defy description. How anyone
what's,
could
what's
think.
Your new treat you're getting out, Patrick?
I've got an apple strudel large.
What was the previous thing you had? Apricot something?
That was, no, that was an apple tart. I've doubled down on apple tonight.
Where'd you go?
It was just
you. No, really.
Did you?
They went the road. They got a good bakery. Yeah, very good bakery.
Did you think that maybe some of us would have been hungry, mate?
Genuinely did not even cross my mind.
So when I brought the donut,
I mean, that looks like a thing you could break some off of for Frosty.
It's not really that
you could
easy.
Probably cut that in four. Frosty, we got a kitchen here with knives.
Yeah, mate.
Yeah.
Would you like a coffee as well?
No, I'm okay. I've got some water, thank you. Okay.
Do you have a hot chocolate? Do you have hot chocolates?
Yeah, dude, we've got a full coffee machine.
Could you make me a hot chocolate?
No.
There we go.
You're not even sharing your strudel.
And here is where we insert our advertisement and go get coffee.
I thought we were about to share my strudel. So I was like, well, if I'm going to give you a quarter each of my strudel, then I may as well try and get a hot chocolate out of this.
To be fair, it's the other podcast where you're supposed to bring along snacks if you're the guest. So, you know.
Well, one guest has brought snacks.
So I consider that to be setting the standard, and that needs to be followed every time.
I think if we have guests, we should bribe them with food.
All right. Anything else anybody wants to talk about the grand final? Because in all honesty, it was a bit of a shit game in the end.
It was. Newcastle should still have won. They had more possession, more shots on goal. They just, yeah, could.
Are we going to plug the fact that it was Costa scoring the winner?
No.
It was offside. No one scored that goal.
Yeah.
Can you put some crickets over that?
I think the silence speaks for itself.
Yeah.
There is no need. If there was,
I was just asking.
If it was a visual medium, there would have been this tumbleweed come through that frame.
I mean, it's tough because I don't think Victory were out of this game at all. I think they could have ended up winning this, but I think this feels like a result there's always going to be an asterisk by. I mean, obviously, the Victory fans are going to claim that this, you know, was a legitimate, complete, fine victory and all that stuff, but I think there's a lot of people out there from neutral teams and certainly from Newcastle who are going to be going, well, you didn't really win that one, did you?
Yeah. That's the thing, is that I feel sad for Newcastle, but I feel sad for the Victory as well.
Yeah.
And, like, the Victory supporters have just been... what's the word for it? It's not arrogant, but it's kind of like they're just ignoring... They're having to convince themselves of the fact that this goal
tough, because if, say, this was the Phoenix who'd won this and this was our one championship, I mean, obviously the Phoenix have a range to fall back on, but if this was our one grand final and this is how we won it, I would still be happy. I mean, I would not necessarily celebrate the way some of them have.
Yeah, it's the
but
attitude.
It'd be hard not to still be happy.
I would be a complete dick about it if we'd won it this way, and I'd say, don't care, haha, we won. And so I don't blame the Victory fans.
And
for
I would
doing
feel
exactly
sorry for you in the way that I feel sorry for these Victory fans having to try so hard to convince themselves this one actually counts, because it doesn't.
I'd just be honest and I would be a dick about it. So, you know, it's fine.
I'd be a dick, but I always am. So.
I was about to say, you're always a dick. So, and that was the A-League season. Summed up on a shitty VAR decision, which...
I just hope VAR doesn't fuck up the World Cup, honestly.
When it first got announced, I joked that in the World Cup final, we'll have a 5-minute VAR thing in the 94th minute.
You did actually joke about the A-League final as well.
Yeah, I know.
I remember you... It's like
this is going to be great when the VAR fuck up decides the final. It's like, yeah, this is going to happen in the World Cup, and it, on probability, will happen in one of the knockout games, and it'll make a huge difference.
You look at the was it us versus was it Mexico in the Confederations Cup, where they had that massive to do where, you know, yellow cards got branded to box all and he should have seen a red. They kind of fucked that up with the VAR as well.
Yeah,
they got the decisions completely wrong, and there should have been three people sent and no one was.
And those were things that everybody, as an all-white supporter, was like, yeah, Boxy should have been sent there. And they just didn't do it.
It really worries me that the world sporting showpiece could be screwed over by some stupid piece of technology that's not being used as effectively as it could be.
That's the only way that FIFA's ever going to drop VAR, though.
The annoying thing is
if it fucks up on the website. In the same way that the only reason we have goal line technology was because of that goal that Lampard scored. Like, that's the only reason we got goal line technology.
Yeah, but you know what? That goal line technology works brilliantly.
It's amazing.
Absolutely brilliantly. Yeah. And that I'm okay with. Just leave it at that. Or maybe look at doing the offside line like the NFL guys
yellow
do
line.
With their with the yellow line technology. I mean, it needs an advancement, but that's something that could be looked into.
Can you talk about how to do that one, Dave?
Hawkeye might be the answer.
To do anything, but I just don't understand why they're in charge of broadcasting. They're not a broadcaster. They're a technology company, yeah. And it makes no sense to me why they'd be involved in a broadcast loop. But the annoying thing for me about the whole situation is I like VAR. I want there to be video-assisted refereeing in football, but I want it to work.
Yeah.
And the problem is that every time we see it not work, we don't learn from that. We don't fix those problems. It just blunders on in the same shambles. Like, there are things that can be supported by the video assistant, and we should be doing that, but we need to recognize where those limits are and use it properly. But instead, it seems to be we use it for all this stuff, and it's shit, or we bin it entirely. And I just don't like that as the outcome, because I don't necessarily think that this should be... this should be a situation where we go, let's just bin it entirely then. I think this should be let's learn from this. Let's have backups. Let's have hard limits on what can actually be looked at here, because the A-League was meant to have hard limits, and then they, within minutes of the whole thing starting, were well outside the limits of what they were outside.
Totally,
And then they tried to rein it back in, but they didn't rein it back in enough, and it was just a shambles. It just needs to be, here are the guidelines. Here's what it can do. Let's just use it for that, and let's make sure it works for that.
Yeah.
And if it did that, fucking brilliant.
Yeah, it needs to be... decisions with no grey area, which are things like offsides, did the ball cross the line, was the penalty inside or outside the box, like
and
things
like
that.
That's why the goal line stuff works so well, because it's just clear cut.
Yeah.
It's yes or no, and that's it.
Oh, and also for cards, foul is called, it's like, is this a yellow, is this a red?
No, I think that's something that should absolutely not be used for. There's too much interpretation in those things. We saw it in the Mariners game where they showed reds for things that were probably just yellows. It's the same thing you were talking about earlier, where if you slow something down frame by frame, it looks worse than it is.
I totally agree with that.
Say a bit of a melee, all in, who were the people who started,
who threw a punch,
happened there, fine. But I agree, if it's a tackle and it's a judgment call, is this a foul, a yellow or a red, the ref needs to be making
that
call.
Is that a pen or no pen? Like things like that, I don't think we should be using it for. There's too much grey area. And to be honest, the referee on the field has probably got it right, or at the very least, he's missed a key piece of information because of his angle or something like that. And you can understand why an on-field referee would miss it. It's the whole minimum interference for maximum effect thing. There was minimal interference for maximum effect in the grand final, but not in a good way. But the World Cup is going to be interesting to see how it pans out. And part of me hopes it goes horrifically bad and we ban VAR. Part of me hopes that VAR actually works really well in the way that they're using it in the World Cup, and that everywhere else can learn from the way that was utilised.
It's not getting fixed in time for the World Cup.
No. I'm totally on board with what Dave said. I want there to be video assistance. I think that they maybe should have started small, just gone... you know, the small things like offside. I mean, you saw it with cricket. They started with runouts.
Yeah.
It's like, is it in, is it out? Yeah.
And then they went to, did he hit the ball or not?
Yeah.
And things like that. And then eventually we got to the point where we were using ball tracking to go, was this going to hit the stumps or not?
Yeah.
And even within that, they have a fuzzy area where they're like, this is a tight call, so we're going to stick with what the on-field decision was, because we're talking millimetres, and, you know, the technology is decent, but it's not necessarily perfect.
But even then, they still had to refine that part of it, because initially, if it was hidden the wickets, but it wasn't hidden the wickets enough, you still lost your review. But now they've had to refine that, so you don't lose your review. And so that's a thing that cricket has clearly done over time, is refined it based on the evidence available to them. And we're not seeing that with the VAR at all, and that's where the problem is. Should we move on from this? Because it's just depressing to me how shit the VAR is.
Let's talk about Matt Redenton.
We are, because breaking news, Newcastle Jets have just announced they assigned Matt Redenton, which is a huge fucking loss for the Phoenix.
It's probably the worst kept secret, I think, in the off-seasons thus far. First off, congratulations to Matt, because it's a great move for him to go and work under Ernie. The fact that they're showing the faith in him to, I think, use a visa spot. I don't think he qualifies as a local in Australia.
He's a Kiwi.
Yeah, so the fact that they're prepared to use a visa spot on him, 72 games, 22 years old, obviously got some great experience under his belt and a long way to go in his career, and he can develop very, very well under Ernie Merrick, as was shown previously.
Well, it's great for the All Whites. It's shit for the Knicks. But.
Absolutely horrendous for the Knicks, because he could have been the core for our midfield for years to come.
It means that we definitely need a visa defensive midfielder.
Yep.
There's no bridge there. We have to sign a visa, a high quality. That has to be our key signing. Yep. I think
he could have been the next Vinny Lear for our club in the 10 years at the club, like true club man, and stay here for a long, long time. It's a pity that obviously they couldn't get over the line with us, but I still think it's great for him. But it does leave a massive hole within our central midfield.
You can't blame him for wanting to go overseas to a club that's willing to use an import slot on him and clearly be an integral part of their team next season.
You'd have to say they've probably offered some money as well. I mean, you spend money on your imports, and I suspect they've probably offered more than we did.
Definitely. And the fact that it's a choice between Ernie, who was the best coach in the A-League this season, and someone.
Second best coach behind Grandma.
Oh, God. Fuck off. Ridiculous. The thing about this that is most pleasing for me, because I'm a troll, is that all the haters out there who said that Matt Redenham was terrible and should have been dropped and he was the worst player of the Phoenix and all that kind of thing, look where he is now. Like, there's another team out there willing to spend one of their five import slots on him. That's how good he was. And cash. That's how good he was. Like, you were just so wrong. You were so wrong, and it pleases me.
Name names, Patrick. Come
on. We should just actually just name everyone who said that.
You've got it tattooed on your arm.
I don't think he's going to kazoo this episode, so he probably doesn't want to have to kazoo all of those names at the same time.
Fuck that. No, I'm with him. Just call them all out.
No, I agree. And the thing about it for me is I wonder how much of that was a factor as well, because Wellington's a small place, and there have been a lot of people complaining in a lot of various media forms about how bad Redenton's been. And it beggars belief that these people have been saying that, because he's been so good for us for so long. But I would struggle to believe that Matt himself hasn't seen at least some of that, where he's had a fantastic game and he surely feels like he's had a great game, to just get shit canned for it. It's just unbelievable. And I wonder how much that plays into his mind of, at least I'm away from some of that, you know, toxic atmosphere. There's better off on the table, they really value me, it's under Ernie, and I don't have to deal with that bullshit anymore.
Most of this I had seen online, and then like a few weeks back one popped up in real life and was trying to convince me, despite the fact that me just saying I thought Redenton had a fantastic game, like turned around at me and said no he didn't, he was terrible. It's just like, how can you think that? Like, you're just so uninformed. And perhaps the people who do this for a living and kept putting him in the starting 11 every week and are paying him shitloads of money know more about it than you. Perhaps that's the case. I don't know.
Would you say your opinion is more right than everyone else's?
My opinion is backed up by Dario Kalisic, Chris Greenacre.
Is that really the backing of his Kalisic?
Yeah, that was not a good
drop mention. The Kalisic, go with Greenacre. That's, and the fact that he's been selected in the All Whites in the last round of...
Fritz Schmidt, Ernie Merrick, Chris Greenacre, and Dario, to his credit, all saw this kid as the fantastic midfield player that he is. And because I agree with them, I think that I'm right in this. Like, I don't think I'm wrong here.
What opinions do you have that you think are wrong?
That Paul Gascoigne.
I thought it was Yuri Gascoigne.
It's called Gascoigne. Anyway, it's a real shame he's gone to the Jets. I can see why it's happened, and I don't blame any one party. I don't necessarily blame the Phoenix. They offered him what he could under their salary cap. Perhaps he could have done better. I don't blame Redenton for going, because absolutely it was great for his career. And I don't blame the Jets for signing him, because that's awesome, but I'm just still disappointed that this is the way it's turned out.
Yeah, totally agree. Just for next season, just devil's advocate, do we think that someone like Kikuchi can step in there? That is his natural position, but is he too young to kind of sit alongside someone, or, you know?
I think whether Kikuchi starts there or not is entirely dependent on who else you sign. So at the moment, Kikuchi's been starting at left back. We have only three centre backs, one of whom has to start on the right, so that we Mullen, Fox, which means Doyle has to start left, and Kikuchi would have to be on the left hand side. If you sign some defenders, then you would get. You could look at putting Kikuchi there, but again, the kid's 17 years old, and whilst he's going to turn into being a fantastic footballer, at this point in time, I just don't know whether he's got the skills and capabilities to deliver.
Dave and Frosty have just gone to the bathroom together, which I find hilarious, and they've just left the two of us in the room together.
And completely ignoring the point that I was talking about when I was actually answering what Frosty was asking.
I wasn't listening either, because I was just watching.
It's kind of important, because Dave is heading down towards, we've got a bank vault down there, and there's no door handle on the inside, and I don't even think it can be opened once it's locked. So
I'd be okay with
that.
This
was important.
That would be quite funny. Hey,
that would.
Where's Dave gone? Yeah. Oh, he's locked in the bank vault.
Yeah. There's no actual
is
oxygen
it
in there.
Maybe we don't want that to happen.
No, I'm pretty sure that would be a blanket no on coming back again next week.
So in basic summary, Kikuchi could play there, but I don't think he's yet got the skills. And fuck you all.
No, I'd like to hear.
I mean, you can just listen to the podcast.
No, I do actually. I did hear what you said. I just like winding Patrick up. It's so much fun. But yes, it does mean that we definitely need someone else alongside him. But if you're going to play a 4-2-3-1 or something like that, and you're playing two defensive midfielders, or we sign a really good box to box, maybe
we have a really good box to box. Well, I'm more creative than Sar Pressing, to be honest.
He's not box to box creative.
Yeah, no, it's fair. You're
anyway,
right.
Let's move on to the Football Ferns, who two big pieces of news this week. They're playing a game against Japan on the 10th of June at 3 p.m. at Westpac Stadium, which is fucking awesome.
It's amazing.
They like football.
Yeah.
Sunday afternoon football.
Are you going to take your boy along?
Maybe. He did actually watch some kids' football the other day and didn't throw
run
a tantrum.
Away or try and kick the ball.
Yeah. Yep, you're going to bring Gabby along?
Unsure. She seems to struggle with 90 minutes of football. So
if it's women's football, will she be more on board with it?
No, she won't care.
Little kid, 90 minutes is a long time.
I know.
Yeah. The price, by what we've heard, I don't know if this is official.
15.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. It's excellent.
$15 is perfect.
Yeah. So, I mean, even if you only make it through one half, it's still not that bad at all. I mean, at that price, bring the whole family along.
I would love to see there be 15,000 people at Westpac Stadium for an international team who we don't see very often in these parts, I think. As long as I can remember, the Football Ferns have played two games in Auckland. And
yeah, they haven't played in Wellington since the 90s.
Yeah, jeez.
Okay, since I don't remember them, because I would have gone in the entire time I've lived in Wellington, I don't remember them playing here. And I have been to every All-Whites game in Wellington since I moved here.
Yeah, so, no, it's awesome that we get to get out and support the Ferns. And hopefully, like I said, everyone gets along. I think Capital Football are looking at or have postponed women's football on the Sunday.
They have done so.
So all bar one round, which is then being played much earlier, so they can still get to the game.
Being played at like 11 o'clock or something.
Yeah, one division rather than one round. Yeah.
Which is awesome from Capital Football. And hopefully it means as a result that we get lots of people out to watch the game.
And good opposition too.
Pray for a still day.
Japan are an excellent team.
Top five in the world, I think. And former world champions, if I remember correctly.
I think they're sixth at the moment, but still.
Yeah, they lost the last.
There's only, I think, two teams that have ever won the World Cup, the Women's World Cup, and it's the US and Japan.
I think Germany may have won as
well. It's three, but it's a very low number of Japan are one of them.
Because last World Cup, Japan lost the final to the USA, and I think it was the one prior to that they won.
And Japan just recently beat the Matildas in the Asian Cup final, so they are Asian champions as well.
Damn, how disappointing. Hashtag make and take and
stuff. The Matildas are actually a lot of fun to watch. They play some amazing football.
Oh, I've no doubt they're awesome, but they're Australian. So happy that they lose.
I feel more comfortable supporting the Matildas than I do the Socceroos, for example, because the Socceroos are full of twats.
I will support none of the Australian teams. In fact, I'm contemplating, I've already got a Peru shirt, I'm contemplating going to buy a French and a Danish shirt just so I can wear those to the pub in for the Australian
games. I have a full signed Socceroos kit.
Are you going to wear that? Are you going to go FTW? Go FTW for the games?
No, the one time I've used it for anything was to bait Tony P by hanging it on the back of a urinal.
Outstanding.
Excellent.
And maybe put that like on an effigy of Tim Cahill, and we could burn that on the waterfront of Australia qualified.
Why? He's not going.
Don't really care if he is or not.
Rumour is he's signing with a new club. Have you heard about this?
Oh, the
Sydney United.
Sydney Olympic, you mean?
Oh, it's Sydney Olympic.
Yeah. But that was started on an Olympic Facebook page.
The rumour is it's whichever club he started out at. I thought it was United, but it's rumour is he's going back there to play for the rest of the NSL season in preparation for the World Cup.
Wow.
Good.
Wow. He's not going to be in the 23. There's no way he can be in the 23.
No, well, there's already a striker who played against Millwall that hit in one game got more minutes than Cahill had all season. So
he got 19 minutes in Millwall or something.
Yeah.
And it was, and in one of those 90 minutes, did he punch him or something and get a big four-game ban or something ridiculous?
Yeah,
I don't know what he did. I don't know.
Sent off for a while.
The other big piece of Football Ferns news is that the PFA and New Zealand Football have negotiated a joint collective bargaining agreement where the Football Ferns get all the same rights and privileges, I guess, not quite the right term, as the All Whites, which involves equal match fees, equal image rights, and equal travel allowances.
And share of prize money.
Equal share of prize money, yeah.
And training fees, as well as match fees.
So basically everything that the All Whites get paid and things in terms of their professionalism and going to places, like business class travel, for example, as being used for the firm, which I think is excellent. I think it is long overdue. One of the things New Zealand Football didn't say in this was what was already there, like, and what everything was already like. There were certainly things in place where they were getting the same thing anyway. But it's awesome that football, and it's been surprising how the general New Zealand public has reacted to this, because Football led 3 News last night, for example, with this story, which is great. I think New Zealand Football, for the first time, have got a good news story and done a really good job of pushing it out to the masses.
I had a couple of people at work actually ask me about this who have no interest in football. One person actually hates football, but she was quite chuffed that New Zealand Football had done that. So I think that's great.
Dave, thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fantastic move, and I think it's like much as I want to praise it, it's sad to see that it's quite a polarizing issue. People either absolutely love this and accept this was an overdue thing that needed to be done, or there are a lot of people seeming to hate on the decision, going, "Oh well, the crowds are smaller and whatever." It's like, well, that's actually irrelevant in the scheme of things. You know, we need to find ways to improve that viewership, and you know, if we get the Football Ferns getting the same TV deals and the same amount of viewership as the men, great. But it doesn't mean we should pay them less, particularly when what we're talking about here is things like share of prize money. We're talking a percentage, so the amount of money they're still going to get is going to be less because the prize money from FIFA for women's tournaments remains less than it is for the men, but they should still get the same share. That seems just a no-brainer to me.
And in terms of individual match fees and daily allowances,
yep,
they're doing the same job. They're going to a Absolutely. Foreign country mm-hmm. to play a game of football. They're doing exactly the same thing. And yes, the football itself might not be at the same level of physical prowess just because of the differences between the male and female bodies, but they're still doing the same thing. They're going somewhere else and playing a game of football, and it makes absolute sense to me that everybody is paid the same thing to do that.
Particularly when these people are still contracted to clubs, that's their primary income. This is essentially a fee over and above that. And we're not talking huge sums of money here. You know, the reality is of the situation that, you know, Moses Dyer and Chris Wood get the same money for this already. So it makes sense to me that, you know, the Football Ferns should be getting the same as that men's team. It doesn't make any difference at all. Whereas, you know, you can definitely understand from an economics argument why, say, Chris Wood gets paid more from his club than Moses Dyer does. But that's not what we're talking about here.
Does Moses Dyer get paid? Because he's playing amateur football.
The difference between what the national body resources the teams at should be the same.
Yeah, I see your point about people who argue for whatever reason that men's footballers should be paid more by New Zealand Football, and it just makes no sense to me whatsoever. And you're right, unfortunately, you read the Stuff comments on this article, and this was the one time where I did read the Stuff comments because I was genuinely interested about what people who were anti this actually, what their argument was. And it just made zero, like the arguments of they don't bring enough people into the stadiums, or they don't make enough money in terms of sponsorship deals and things, just don't stack up, because the way to grow the game and the way to get more people in the stadiums is to get the best players playing for the country more often. And the way to do that is to get all the players on board. Like, what it was 18 months ago that Abby Ursig and Sarah Gregorius and Jasmine Pereira were all quitting the Football Perth because they couldn't justify coming out to play these games. And for the New Zealand Football to recognise that they were doing the wrong thing and turn around so 180 in the last 12 months with the PFA's help is amazing.
Yeah.
And it makes me sad that as a society we're still in a place where people don't understand that pay parity should be a thing. It's sad, like you said. Anyway, local football, and by local I mean continental football, because as we all know, Team Wellington...
By local I mean not local at all.
The opposite. The least local football we have.
Part of it's local and some of it isn't.
It's not international football.
Yeah, it is.
How many countries are involved?
Two. Which is the name of the international game. Anyway, Team Wellington are playing Lautoka this weekend in the OFC Champions League final. And if you listen to this podcast and you're in Wellington and you aren't going to that game, please get in touch with me, because I'm going to tell you you're an idiot and that you should be at this game, because it is the biggest game of football played in Wellington in the last 12 months, bar none, really. Oh, no, actually, there was a Peru game, wasn't there? That doesn't quite stack up.
No.
Second most important game in Wellington in the last 12 months, and it's going to be a great game. I'm really looking forward to seeing this game. I think that there might be a feeling that Team Wellington should walk this home, but that's not going to be the case at all. So...
No, I think we should ignore the results that came out of the pre-Christmas trip to Lautoka, which was the 3-0 and the 6-0. Yeah. I think what's more accurate would be look at the result where Auckland beat them 1-0 in the group stages. I think that's probably more of a fair representation of where they're at. They'll have learned a lot by playing us in those pre-season games, plus the games against Auckland as well. So... the thing about the Jose teams, though, and they showed this in the 11-0 win against Leigh City, is that they don't take the foot off. They will do everything they can to kill this off in the first leg, so you know they're going to be going for it, and they're going to be going for it for 90 minutes. And if they do manage to get a good lead up, fantastic. So it's going to be worthwhile to watch. I don't see them taking this team lightly. I see they'll learn the lessons, as I say, from the preseason trip, but it's not going to be... Sorry, it is going to be a very, very good watch. And whilst I think T-Dubs go in heavy, heavy favourites, we can't discount La Toka at this point.
I think it's certainly going to be an easier game than Auckland City was. I think it would be naive to think that La Toka would be able to bring the same level of intensity that Auckland could. But that also could be harder. You could be playing against a team who knows that they're just going to put 11 players behind the ball for 90 minutes and hope that they can keep it nil.
Yeah, which you also
Auckland,
know.
Which Auckland did in periods and Auckland didn't do in periods. So,
but you also know you have to go to Fiji to play the second leg. And that's a shitload harder than going up to Auckland to play the second leg. Yeah. Whilst the team you're playing might be easier.
I'd prefer to go to Fiji.
To kick a football round in 30-plus degree heat, I think that's going
to
be pretty difficult.
I struggle to kick a football round in 20-degree heat here.
Yeah,
so,
as I heard about your escapades last weekend. I'm sure Dave is going to fill us in on those before we leave tonight.
No, I don't think so.
But I will raise one thing about the Champions League game, and you have to wonder whether there'll be an element of Team Wellington having already played their final, because I think it'd be fair to say that would have been the way they prepared for that Auckland game, was that this was essentially the final. You know, this was where the toughest game was going to be, and you know, going up to Auckland and doing the business would have felt like winning the league in many ways. And you know, this is still a final hurdle and it's just as important, but you do have to wonder if they would have been building up to peak for that Auckland game, and actually they might tail off a little bit here, and that might bring down their performance a little. I mean, you would hope it doesn't. You'd hope they've done the right motivating over the last couple of weeks and got them G'd up for this again. But I'm sure still in the back of all those players' minds, they know that this should be an easier task, and they might go in, you know, just that little undercooked.
I will almost guarantee that's going to happen. The question is whether La Toka can take advantage. And if they can manage to score an away goal, things get very, very interesting. Especially if La Toka get their tails up and really start charging, and it, you know, finishes maybe only a one goal win to T-Dubs with a La Toka, you know, goal away or two. Fiji is going to be really tough if that's the case. I think they need to go in there with a 2 or 3 goal buffer, and especially with a clean sheet.
I agree that it's possible. I just don't. I don't think, and I hope that Jose won't let them get to that point.
No, I agree.
I think Jose is a better coach than let them get, because you can imagine the effort and the years of effort, to be fair, because they've been in this position against Auckland in the final 3 times and lost. The effort to get here ahead of Auckland is years in the making, and if you let that Club World Cup slip now after 3 to 4 years of effort, honestly, as a fan, I'd be heartbroken.
Oh,
I can't imagine what it would be like for the people involved with the squad.
Yeah, so get down to David Farrington on Sunday for that. There are pre-orders for tickets.
$10.
Yeah, $10. Yeah, I think if you jump on the Team Wellington Facebook page, you can send pre-orders in.
Everybody has to have a ticket, so season passes don't work.
Yeah,
true. I think it's fair to say that there's a high probability this sells out. So
totally, yeah.
Don't assume you'll be able to turn up there at 2 o'clock and be able to get in. Because I think the pre-sales will have taken a big chunk, but I think even the gate sales will probably have sold out pretty quick.
And it's going to fill up quickly as well. I reckon if you're not there by 1:30, you'll struggle to get a good spot if you get in at all. So turn up early, buy some drinks at the bar, and have a sausage from the barbecue. And have a great day out on Sunday. Anyone know what the weather's going to be like?
I haven't actually looked at it. Well, if you give me a second, I'll do a 5-day forecast.
5-day forecast, okay. I'm only caring about one of the days, but that's okay. It's going to be... that's the wrong day that you're pointing out to me. It's going to be rainy on Sunday, apparently, but 100% chance of rain.
18 degrees, so it's going to be muggy.
Yeah, and raining.
Yeah.
Yeah, so bring a raincoat, but still get there 1:30.
That's frustrating.
We've had worse. And to be honest,
potentially
cold,
good.
Rainy day.
Potentially good, yeah. Yeah.
Can they do it in a cold, wet Tuesday in Stoke?
Stoke couldn't.
Let's jump to Kiwis Overseas. Cam, you've pushed your phone over to me with Kiwis Overseas open on it, so I guess that means I'm reading it this week.
Yay!
Yes, it does. Unless you really want me to do it.
No, I'll do it.
I'm quite happy for you to take this.
If it goes bad, I might need to hide myself away in that bank vault, but we'll see. And so this is Kiwis Overseas, brought to you by Optivise. Thank you, Jared. Themis Mopoulos signed off the season on a high, helping Giannina to a 3-1 win over Olympiakos. Themi opened the scoring.
Olympiakos.
Themi opened the scoring from a corner, taking his tally to 4 goals all season. Themi picked up a yellow card, making it 10 for the season, his highest number of cards since 2014. Jinin finished the season in ninth place of 16 teams, and Temi has 2 years left on his contract extension that he just signed. Here in vain, went into the final round of the Eredivisie, knowing they needed a draw against Feyenoord to guarantee a playoff place. Marco Rojas played the first 64 minutes, but here in vain went down 3-2. His side missed a penalty before conceding a late goal to put their position into jeopardy. Big loss by Pek Zwolle meant that they finished the season in eighth and play Utrecht home and away in the playoff semi-finals. That big loss for Zwolle was a game that Ryan Thomas didn't play in. That was a 6-0 loss to AZ Alkmaar, and Zwolle finished ninth, just one place behind Heerenveen. Mamelodi Sundowns wrapped up the South African Premier Soccer League with a 3-1 win over Ajax Cape Town. Is it Ajax Cape Town or is it Ajax?
Ajax.
Even there, that's Ajax, not just in Dutch.
That's right. Well, because of the massive Dutch population in South Africa.
The win gives Jeremy Brockie his first league title, although he's only seen 190 minutes of league action since his transfer from Supersport. The Sundowns also opened their African Champions League campaign with a 1-1 draw against holders Wydad Casablanca, who knocked them out in last season's quarterfinals. Chris Wood missed Burnley's 5-0 thrashing at the hands of Arsenal. He cut his foot in a challenge last week. Burnley finished 7th. West Ham had a 2-0 win over Leicester, which means they get survival in Premier League and avoid relegation. Stephen Old helped Morecambe pick up a crucial clean sheet as they drew 0-0 with Coventry in their final game of the season.
So basically, you should have been listening to the last 3 years worth of Kiwis Overseas, because then you'd know how to pronounce these things.
Stephen Old helped Morecambe pick up a crucial clean sheet as they drew 0-0 with Coventry. The draw sends Morecambe finish 22nd, avoiding relegation on goal difference. They stay in League 2. Stefan Marinovic and Michael Boxall were in action as Vancouver Whitecaps travelled to Minnesota United. Minnesota were reduced to 10 men for an off-the-ball incident. They held on to 1-0 win, recording their first clean sheet since July. Minnesota rise to 5th and travel to LAFC, and Vancouver host Houston Dynamo. Elliot Collier's Chicago Fire lost 2-1 to Atlanta United. They host Montreal next week. Kip Colvey, Tommy Smith and Declan Wynn all played for the Colorado Rapids. They took on top of the conference Sporting Kansas City. They went down 1-0 to record a third loss in a row. Another Kiwi was in action for Portland Timbers, but Bill Tuoloma continued to recover from injury with a 90 minutes performance for the second team. They drew 0-0 with St. Louis. The same competition, Rio Grande Valley. Mm-hmm. How do the Americans pronounce it?
Rio Grande. It's after the river.
Ah, that's a good point. They had a nil draw with Kyle Adams playing 90 minutes against Reno 1868. James Mercer came on at halftime to help Phoenix Rising recover from being 3-1 down to win 4-3 against LA Galaxy 2. Greg Draper was awarded Supporters Player of the Season in addition to his Welsh Premier League Golden Boot in the New Saints End of Season Awards. He got 22 goals at a rate of 89 minutes played per goal. His team won the league by 14 points. Max Crocombe played his first match since returning from All Whites duty as Salford City ended their season with a 4-0 win over Leamington. Salford won the National League North by 6 points. That gets them promotion to National League, one tier below League 2. Adam Mitchell played 90 minutes as Bolton Wanderers Under-23s won the Professional Development League, beating Nottingham Forest 2-1 in the final. They go up a division on that win. Oh, this is going to be tough. Stourbridge. They won the Birmingham Senior Cup final, beating Hednesford 2-1 in Matt Gould's last game for the club. On to the women. Kirsty Yellup scored from the penalty spot as Clip beat Vallaringa 3-0. Vallaringa missed a penalty before being reduced to 10 players. That's 4 wins in a row for Clip, and they're in second place. Abby Ersic and Rosie White featured in North Carolina Courage's 1-1 draw with Chicago Red Stars for their respective teams. North Carolina remain top of the table and host Washington on Sunday. Utah Royals beat Washington Spirit 2-0 with Katie Bowen coming on the 85th minute, and a goalkeeper mistake cost Rebecca Stott's Sky Blue FC as they lost 3-2 to Houston Dash. CJ Bott played 90 minutes and picked up a yellow card as USV Jena beat Hoffenheim 3-2. That's their first win in 8. Amber Hearns FC Köln lost 2-0 to fellow strugglers Duisburg. Michaela Moore was an unused sub. Jana, oh god, have you said this one before? Okay,
sorry, which one is
Jana
that?
Jana Radosavljevic.
That's a fantastic effort, mate. I think you've done very, very well there.
I'll take it. Yep. Scored twice from the penalty spot as Kloppenburg beat Turbine Potsdam 2-1 in the second Bundesliga. Kloppenburg's final match is against league leaders Borussia Mönchengladbach on Sunday. I know that one. I can do that. Ellie Riley played 90 minutes as Rosengard beat Djurgården 2-1. Hannah Wilkinson came off in the 68th minute as Vitsø went down 1-0 to Linnem Bunkerflow.
Bunkerflow's
back.
I've missed you, Bunkerflow.
Yeah, that must have been in different divisions or something because they haven't played in a while.
No, we did that really long period of time where I didn't bother doing the research.
Oh, cool.
And there was probably games
good
in
one.
There.
Katie Rood came on the 85th minute as Juventus bounced back from the cup quarterfinal defeat to beat their opposition, which I'm not going to try and pronounce, 2-0. They remain top of the league on goal difference. Yeah, and that is everything this week. We have made it to the end without mentioning Iniesta, which is a great way to end the pod. Any thoughts around the table before we wrap up for the night?
Cam forgot his sunglasses.
Yeah, you did, and you only got one beanie on.
I lost my sunglasses.
And the other beanie?
No, I know where the other beanies are.
You lost your sunglasses?
I've lost my sunglasses.
What is
Do you think taking your sunglasses out at night might have increased the chances of losing them?
No, I think having massive clear out at home and my wife getting hold of all my pairs of sunglasses is probably where the issue lies.
I think she's seen sense and gone, you don't need these, you only wear these at night. And thrown them out, which is good.
No, I don't only wear them at night.
I've only seen you wear them at night.
That's because you only see me at night.
And that'll do it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next week. What will we do next week? I don't know if we'll do next week.
Unsure. We've got World Cup coming up, so maybe we should plan out a few podcasts around the World Cup.
We should do that.
Yeah.
That's going to be tough on the body.
It is.
Well, because the problem is there's like 10 p.m. New Zealand time games.
Only one. That's
only
Australia versus France, and it's on a weekend.
The only one.
Every other game is midnight, 3 a.m. and 6 a.m.
Yeah, it's tough, right?
Yep.
I reckon you do the midnight and then sleep from 2 till 6. And then do the 6 a.m.
No, see, I'm going to have to do the one game per night thing. So I'm probably going to have to pick and choose. I'll watch one game before work and I'll watch one game after work.
Oh, yeah, I see, yeah.
Yeah.
What you could do is get to bed early, get up at 3, watch the 3, then in the hour between games, travel into Kings or something and watch the second game at Kings.
So that's exactly what I did at the last World Cup.
Yeah.
I got up at 3 o'clock every morning and watched the 3 o'clock kickoff.
Yeah.
And then I got ready for work, went into work for an hour.
It's doable.
And then went and watched the second game at Kings. And I did that every day of the week while the World Cup group stages were on.
It's a doable.
Yes, but by the end of the 3 o'clock games, which was the end of the group stage, I was in bed by 7:30, 8 o'clock at night.
I'll be okay with that.
Yeah.
That'll do for this week. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you whenever we see you. Don't know when it's going to be. Thank you and goodbye. F***ing nailing the outro brings you delicious apple strudels bring you
boots to the face bring you
shh, it's a library brings you
VAR is going to fuck over the World Cup brings you